the Atlantic to the Pacific, across the islands of the Caribbean, from mountain crest to mountain crest, from canyons to the clouds and into the cosmos, we are pumping wattage high and low, plus streaming worldwide on the internet. And keeping you company tonight, it's the place to relax and hang out. I'm your host, Joshua P. Warren, and this is Speaking of Strange, giving you the latest and discussing the weirdest. We have assembled the finest team of reporters and the most intriguing guests, and that's why we're your favorite hub in a wild world. So keep it tuned right here. And yes, tonight is the special Christmas edition of Speaking of Strange. I'm Joshua B. Warren, and tonight's show is brought to you by Wright's Coin Shop. It's your one stop for all your Christmas goodies. I highly recommend you call them Monday morning at 828-298-5402, or just stop by and visit Wright's Coin Shop. You can go to speakingofstrange.com for a link. Or again, call 828-298-5402 and go in there and visit in person with Miss Shelley Wright to get something truly special that will hold its value and, in fact, most likely increase in value as the years roll by. And, you know, I, as a native of Asheville, North Carolina, have always been intrigued to hear people claim, I don't know if it's true or not, but claim that you will actually find more people of Scotch-Irish descent here in Western North Carolina than you actually will in Scotland and Ireland. And that's because the Europeans came over here and decided to settle in these mountains because they felt at home. It was so reminiscent of the places where they lived in Europe. And, of course, many of those folks combined some of their Gaelic Celtic traditions with Native American traditions, and that gives us this very unique culture that we have here. And there is one aspect of Christmas that is rather weird and controversial that is celebrated not only to this day in parts of Europe, especially Germany and around the Alpine region, but is sort of being appreciated in a renaissance here in Western North Carolina. And this is the tradition of the Krampus. Now, Krampus is spelled K-R-A-M-P-U-S. And, of course, we all know that when a kid has been behaving, then the idea of Christmas morning is that, well, that kid will be rewarded. And maybe if not, they'll get, at worst, a lump of coal. But it gets a lot worse than that if the Krampus is involved. The Krampus goes all the way back to the ancient Germanic traditions. We're not exactly sure when the Krampus appeared. Similar figures were even in the folklore pre-Christian. But the Krampus is a beast-like creature that punishes those bad children. Generally speaking, the Krampus is one of the scariest looking things you'll ever see, about 8 feet tall, hairy, usually brown or black, with cloven hooves and horns of a goat, wild looking eyes, and a long pointed tongue that lolls out. And often he is seen dragging chains around, thought to symbolize the binding of the devil by the Christian church. And he thrashes the chains for dramatic effect. The Krampus appears on Christmas Eve into Christmas morning at the homes of unruly children. And he not only goes in and completely dominates the household by dragging the children away to eventually feast upon them, but he also seduces the wives inside the households. And so he is a truly sardonic demon. Now, Shelley, I see that you have cracked open your cell phone there, and I bet you're showing Sam a picture of a Krampus. Is that right?
She is, in fact. Yes, this is the first I have ever seen or heard.
Let me see that image. Flash it around there. Okay, well, now, those are illustrations, but you should see some of the costumes that people don when they dress up as the Krampus this time of year. And this actually goes to one of the things. Oh, yeah. There is. How scary is that, Sam?
It's scary. Aren't you scared?
I mean, that's not Christmassy.
No.
That's not Christmassy.
He will eat you.
That's spookier than what you would see at Halloween.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
So, now how is this? I mean, like, you know, the bad girls and boys don't get presents. They don't. That's some demon.
This is a demon.
It's a demon.
Yeah. That will come into the house and wreak absolute havoc.
If you let him in, how does he come?
He doesn't need your permission. Oh, yeah. See, that's a Krampus with long, stringy white hair and horns. And here's what makes this even spookier, especially if you're in Europe. At least one night every December in various places of Europe, they have what is called Krampusnacht, or Night of the Krampus. And on this night, hundreds of men will dress up like that, Sam, like those pictures that you're seeing. And they will appear and roam the streets at night, dragging these chains around, drinking heavily, and raising all holy hell. And this, of course, is something a lot of locals will fear. They just don't go out of their homes at night.
Drunk Eastern European men dressed as demons.
Yes. And the drunker that they get, the blurrier the line between fact and fiction becomes. And sometimes these guys just end up just beating the crap out of people, destroying things, looting places. You never know how far a Krampusnacht will go.
Well, where is the line between fact and fiction? I mean, is it just a bunch of drunk Eastern European guys dressing up and doing horrible things, or is it a supernatural demon?
Well, there's no doubt that the fact is a bunch of real human beings dress up and do terrible things on occasion on Krampusnacht. As to whether or not the Krampus himself literally exists, I've never seen a Krampus, and I doubt that he exists any more than Santa Claus exists, but to the extent that Santa does exist, so does the Krampus. It depends on what you believe.
Is it indigenous to just a certain region of the world, or
well, it all
based
stems,
on lore?
It all stems back to the Alpine area and the Germanic traditions, but now it's so popular that last December, to my knowledge, the first ever Krampusnacht was held here in Asheville.
Really?
And I attended it.
Of course you did.
Yeah.
And it was a fundraiser.
I was the MC.
They had it at the Auditorium on Haywood Road.
Very cool, yes.
And I did not dress up as the Krampus, but I did appear. The Auditorium is a bar, and they have a stage and performances. And there were guys there who were gigantic. I mean, taller than certainly you and I are, Sam. And what are you, 6 foot six or five or something like that?
Six.
You're 6'6". Yeah, there were guys there, and they weren't wearing stilts. Maybe
loincloths. Yeah.
Maybe they had, big block boots on or something to give them an extra couple inches. But still, big dudes. In fact, last year I was photographed next to one of these Krampuses, and
Google that and see if I can find it.
Well, if you go to my Twitter page, and I don't know if you can search images, I definitely tweeted the image. My Twitter account is twitter.com/Joshua P. Warren, no period after the P. And that's why if you want to follow me on Twitter, there are something like 45,000 people who do. It's at Joshua P. Warren.
45,000.
So last I looked.
Wow.
Yeah.
I got, I think, like 60.
Well, the journey of 1,000 miles begins with 60 steps. And so if you go to my Twitter page, there may be a way to just look at images that I posted, and you'll see me there sort of sheepishly standing next to one of these giant, scary-looking dudes with horns. And, in fact, if you remember the old 80s movie Legend that had Tom Cruise in it, there's a certain similarity there in terms of the facial structure. Often the Krampus will have
long face, very high horns, hair hanging down. And a lot of these guys who play Krampus, they like putting contacts in their eyes, so they look particularly freaky. I have this, article in front of me, and talking about this, and it says traditionally, men dress up like Krampus in Austria, Romania, and southern Bavaria, South Tyrol, the Czech Republic, Slovakia, Hungary, Slovenia, and Croatia. They usually do it during the first week of December, but it can happen at any moment throughout or any time throughout the month of December. And so if you are a person who just doesn't really like the Christmas season because it's become too over-commercialized or it's just too gooey, the Krampus may be your new hero this time of year. Now, okay, you found the photograph of me with a Krampus. Would you like to describe what you're looking at for the listeners,
sir? Well, there is a man who appears to be about 7 foot tall, member of some sort of satanic cult, in a bathrobe / Krampus outfit. Big horns, looks like the lead singer of a Norwegian death metal band. Joshua P. Warren. Ever-present, pint glass in hand, looking, he's got that look, I was like, hey, yeah. That's how I can describe the look. Hey, this dude's paw is on his shoulder. It's a claw paw.
It's pretty bad when you are a grown man, and yet you still are a little nervous about asking if you can have your photograph taken.
Was he cool?
He was super cool, fortunately, yeah. He was a gentle giant. It's weird when a guy who looks like that is just, he's a regular dude who's just drinking beer and is just happy to be there.
Name's Doug with 2 G's. Doug the Krampus.
Precisely, yes. So now you all know what Krampus is, and for your holiday season, you might want to send people Krampus cards. That's popular. There are lots of postcards and similar things that people send out. But when we come back from this break, I want to talk about what I think is one of the most fascinating stories this time of year that you've probably never heard before. I think arguably the absolute most famous Christmas story that we celebrate is Charles Dickens' A Christmas Carol. We all know who Ebenezer Scrooge is. Well, did you know that Scrooge was based on the life of a real man? And when we come back, I'm going to tell you about this real man and the amazing story of his life. How would you like to live your life and then realize you would become the model for one of the representatives for everything that you shouldn't do and shouldn't be in life? I'm Joshua P. Warren, and this is Speaking of Strange.
A smile from a veil. Do you think you can tell?
Chills you to the bone.
But there's nothing in nature that freezes your heart like years of being alone.
It paints you with indifference like a lady paints with rouge.
And the worst of the worst,
the most hated and cursed,
is the one that we call Scrooge.
Unkind as any,
and the wrath of many,
this is Ebenezer Scrooge.
Oh, there goes Mr. Humbug, there goes Mr. Grimm. If they gave a prize for being mean, the winner would be him.
Old Scrooge, he loves his money, cause he thinks it gives him power.
If he became a flavor, you can bet he would be sour.
Even the vegetables don't like him.
Worse for mouses.
Please, sir, I want some cheese.
He must be so lonely, he must be so sad. He goes to extremes to convince us he's bad.
sweet man inside.
Nah.
There goes Mr. Outrage. There goes Mr. Sneer.
He has no time for friends or fun.
His anger makes that clear.
Don't ask him for a favor, cause his nastiness increases.
No crust of bread for those in need.
No Jesus for us, Mises.
Scrooge liked the cold. He was hard and sharp as a flint, secret and self-contained, as solitary as an oyster.
There goes Mr. Heartless. There goes Mr. Cruel.
He never gives. He only takes. He lets his hunger rule.
If being mean's a way of life, you practice and rehearse.
Then all that work is paying off, cause Scrooge is getting worse.
And welcome back to Speaking of Strange, the Christmas edition. I am Joshua P. Warren, and tonight's show is brought to you by Wright's Coin Shop. And you can get your own little stockpile of goodies that you can miserly hoard up by calling Wright's Coin Shop at 828-298-5402. The first step to being Scrooge is getting your pot of gold, right, Shelley?
That's it. You can start with just one.
828-298-5402. As I mentioned, we do have this new experience that we're going to provide two times this coming week as part of Haunted Asheville called Spirits of Christmas. And you can learn about that at hauntedasheville.com. And we're talking about some of the stories that may, the kinds of stories that you might hear about. Now, who is not a fan of A Christmas Carol by Charles Dickens? It's a novella that was actually published December 19th of 1843. In fact, Dickens had trouble getting it published and had to, even though he was well known at that time, and he actually had to put in money and kind of sort of self-publish the first edition. It was a huge hit. And, of course, the star of the story was Ebenezer Scrooge. People immediately began to wonder, was this based on a real person? Now, there have been a number of theories as to who the real Scrooge was, but it seems that the one who is most likely was a man named John Elwes. And, in fact, Dickens made reference to Elwes directly some years later in his last novel called Our Mutual Friend. John Elwes was an Englishman who was born April 7th of 1714, and he died November 26th of 1789 when he was 75 years old. He was born into a respectable English family, and he actually got not one but two great inheritances. He inherited his first fortune from his father, who died when he was just 4 years old. And this fortune was originally shared between him and his mother, and then she died. That was the equivalent in today's money of $12.5 million. And when she died, you know, he got all of that. And then there was a second inheritance that came from his miserly uncle. And that second inheritance was $28 million.
Miser.
Now, his mother, they claim, was such a miser that she reputedly starved herself to death because she just wouldn't spend her money. And there was a similar story about his uncle, whom he inherited his second amount of money from. In fact, that uncle, who had, again, at least $28 million, prided himself on spending no more than today's equivalent per year of $171.60.
How do you think he got so rich?
Yeah. In fact, they say that when he had a really, really, his uncle would have a really special guest over, that they would share a single glass of wine all night long. That was big spending for him. That's as far as he would go. So when John Elwes was 49 years old, he had the $28 million from his uncle, plus what was left of the $12.5 million, which was probably quite a bit. and they say that he was the ultimate miser. He went to bed when darkness fell so that he didn't have to burn candles. He wore only ragged clothes, including a beggar's cast-off wig he found in a hedge. His clothes were so dilapidated that many mistook him for a common street beggar and would put a penny into his hand as they passed him. Okay, so we're talking about a man here who has perhaps close to $40 million in today's money, who looked so ragged that people would hand him a penny when they saw him. To avoid paying for a coach, he would walk in the rain and then sit in wet clothes to save the cost of a fire to dry them. His house was full of expensive furniture, but also molding food. He would eat putrefied game before allowing new food to be bought. On one occasion, he actually ate a moorhen, which is a bird, that a rat had pulled from a river. Rather than spending money for repairs, he allowed his spacious country mansion to become uninhabitable. A relative once stayed at his home in the country, but the bedroom was in such a poor state, the relative awakened in the night by rain pouring on him from the roof. And he moved his bed several times. And then he told John Elwes the next morning about this. And he said, "Oh, I don't mind it myself. That is a nice corner there in the rain." One of the people who knew him well and wrote a book about him said, and I'm just going to read an actual quote, "It is curious to remark how he contrived to mingle small attempts at saving. After sitting up a whole night at play for thousands with the most fashionable and profligate men of the time, he would walk out about 4 in the morning, not toward home, but into Smithfield to meet his own cattle, which were coming to market. And there this same man, forgetful of the scenes he had just left, would stand in the cold or rain bartering with a carcass butcher for a shilling, which in today's terms is 5 cents, 1 nickel. So he would be in situations with all these wealthy men, and then he'd go out in the rain in his rags and argue over a nickel. According to one author named William Haig Miller, he, quote, "complained bitterly of the birds robbing him of so much hay with which to build their nests," end quote. They say that his health was limited by expense. In common with many misers, he distrusted physicians, preferring to treat himself in order to save paying for one. He once badly cut both legs while walking home in the dark, but would only allow the apothecary to treat one, wagering his fee that the untreated limb would heal first. He also bore a wound in a hunting accident. Legend has it one day he was out shooting with a gentleman who was a particularly bad shot. The same man accidentally fired through a hedge, lodging several shot in the miser's cheek.
Which cheek?
With embarrassment and concern, the gentleman approached Elwes to apologize, but Elwes, anticipating the apology, held out his hand and said, quote, "My dear sir, I congratulate you on improving. I thought you would hit me or hit something in time," end quote. What's weird is that this guy was such a miser, and yet they say there were a few occasions in which he actually gave large loans to people.
At 48% interest.
Toward the end of his life, he grew feverish and restless, hoarding small quantities of money in different places. And eventually, this led to his death. When we come back from this break, I'll tell you about the death of John Elwes, the real Ebenezer Scrooge, and then we'll get some into the story of a strange thing you've probably never heard of, a Welsh tradition, the tradition of the Mari Lwyd. I'm Joshua P. Warren, and this is Speaking of Strange.
Mr. Grinch, you really are a heel. You're as cuddly as a cactus, you're as charming as an eel. Mr. Grinch, you're a bad banana with a greasy black peel. You're a monster, Mr. Grinch. Your heart's an empty hole. Your brain is full of spiders. You've got garlic in your soul, Mr. Grinch. I wouldn't touch you with a 39 and a half foot pole. You're a vile one, Mr. Grinch. You have termites in your smile. You have all the tender sweetness of a seasick crocodile, Mr. Grinch. Given the choice between the two of you, I'd take the seasick crocodile. You're a foul one, Mr. Grinch. You're a nasty, wasty skunk. Your heart is full of unwashed socks. Your soul is full of gunk, Mr. Grinch. The three words that best describe you are as follows, and I quote, stink, stank, stunk. You're a rotter, Mr. Grinch. You're the king of sinful sots. Your heart's a dead tomato splotched with moldy purple spots, Mr. Grinch. Your soul is an appalling dump heap, overflowing with the most disgraceful assortment of deplorable rubbish imaginable, mangled up in tangled up knots. You nauseate me, Mr. Grinch, with a nauseous super nos.
You know, Sam, the same guy who sang this song is famous for another phrase in American pop culture. You know what it is?
Was I on the right track earlier? Is it Luke, I Am Your...
No.
It's not James Earl Jones?
It's not James Earl Jones. I don't have the man's name in front of me. It's the same. Yeah, you haven't logged me into this computer, so I can't look things up. It's the same guy who did Tony the Tiger. They're great!
Huh.
Which actually applies to a story we read not too long ago.
You know what's messed up about that song, though? If you played it for kids today, I guarantee you they wouldn't understand 75% of the words.
Yeah, that's
They'd
true.
They'd be like, what does this mean?
Yeah. But this is the guy who was the voice of Tony the Tiger.
I'll get back to you on it.
Yeah. We'll pull up his name. He's dead now. But we will honor him.
Merry Christmas, everybody.
He was the Grinch. No, actually, he wasn't. He was criticizing the Grinch, so he was good. Welcome back to Speaking of Strange, brought to you tonight by Wright's Coin Shop. And you can call Wright's Coin Shop at 828-298-5402. Before we get back to the story, what's his name?
It's a great name.
Yeah?
Thurl Ravenscroft.
Oh, right. Okay. I remember it was
Thurl. Yeah.
That's nice. That's cool.
Thurl Ravenscroft. They're great.
Before we get back to the Scrooge story, if you want to send all your friends and loved ones something that will really help them out that doesn't cost a penny, go to freecharm.com and you will find a free good luck charm there that I produced. It's my gift to the world, freecharm.com. Just go look at it, read about it, use it, and you will see things improve in your life. We're talking right now about John Elwes, the man that most people believe was the inspiration, the real guy upon whom Charles Dickens based his character Ebenezer Scrooge. So toward the end of his life, Elwes grew feverish and restless, hoarding small amounts of money in different places, continually visiting all the places of deposit to see that they were safe. He began suffering from delusion, fearing that he would die in poverty. Now let me pause by saying this is a guy who had probably close to $40 million, and he's worried to death he's going to die in poverty. In the night, he was heard struggling with imaginary robbers, crying out, quote, "I will keep my money, I will. Don't rob me, oh, don't." And when he was asked who was there, he would say, "Sir, I beg you pardon. My name is Elwes. I've been unfortunate enough to be robbed in this house, which I believe is mine, of all the money I have in the world, to 5 guineas and a half a crown." So the family doctor was sent for, and looking at the dying miser, the doctor was heard to remark this, quote, "That man, with his original strength of constitution and lifelong habits of temperance, might have lived 20 years longer, but for his continual anxiety about money." End quote. Even his barrister, his lawyer, who drew up his £800,000 will, was forced to undertake his writings in the firelight by the dying man's bedside in order to save the cost of a candle.
Which even in those days was pretty cheap.
Yes. The famed miser was also known to sleep in the same worn garments that he wore during the day. He was discovered one morning between the sheets with his tattered shoes on his feet, an old torn hat on his head, and a stick in his hand. It was in this condition he died on the 26th of November, 1789. After having lived on only approximately £50 a year, which is about what we would consider $100 a year, he left his fortune, which again, actually by that time was had grown to about $60 million in today's money.
Today's money.
Okay. To his two sons, who were born out of wedlock, George and John, whom he loved, but would not educate, believing that, quote, "putting things into people's heads is the sure way to take money out of their pockets," end quote. The following summary of his character by his friend, biographer Mr. Topham, was, quote, "His public character lives after him pure and without stain. In private life, he was chiefly an enemy to himself. But to others, he did lend much. To himself, he denied everything. But in the pursuit of his property, or in the recovery of it, I have it not in my remembrance one unkind thing that was ever done by him." So he's not quite like the image of Scrooge that we see, you know, kicking snow in a beggar's face. But he was just a guy who was really neurotic and mentally ill, it seems like, when it came to the subject of money. And, you know, one of my favorite movies is Barry Lyndon, which is a Stanley Kubrick film. And there are a lot of people who are Stanley Kubrick fans who have still never seen Barry Lyndon. And it's about, it's the dramatic story told and portrayed what I feel is probably very realistically about people living in the 1700s. And it's a long movie. It's like 4 hours long. And it's just an incredible epic saga. And at the end of the movie, there is a title card that comes up on a black screen. And I've always personally found the words there especially poignant and thought-provoking. After you've watched this whole big story about people in the 1700s, it says, good or bad, handsome or ugly, rich or poor, they are all equal now. They're all dead, right?
Ashes to ashes.
So that's what you have to think about this time of year. There's no reason to be a nasty person. There's no reason to think you can take all this to the grave with you. Not gonna happen.
Hey, you know how much it costs to smile at somebody? Do you know how much it costs to hold a door open and say thank you?
Not a damn shilling.
Not a shilling.
Okay, let's get started on this next unusual topic here. And, of course, we have another break here soon, but we'll just get it going. Have you ever heard, Sam, of what they call the Mare Luid?
No, I had not. This is intriguing.
Yeah. The Mare Luid, in Old English, means the gray mare. Actually, I take that back. It means the gray mare in more modern language. You know what a mare is?
Well, the old gray mare, she ain't what she used to be.
You know what a mare is, Sam?
A female horse?
A female horse. Yeah. And, you know, and I was reading about that, and I thought, well, where does the word nightmare come from?
The nightmare?
Yeah.
The night.
And I started researching it, and I found that if you go back to the old English, the word mare means demon or goblin, especially one that comes in the night.
Was it M-A-Y-R-E?
No, it was spelled M-A-R-E, just like today. And then, so the word night added on to it. Literally, when you say, I've had a nightmare, you're saying, a demon or goblin came and terrified me in the night. That's what a nightmare is. But when we talk about a mare in terms of the Mare Luid, we are talking about the female horse. And the tradition of the Mare Luid is one of the weirdest that I've ever come across. It's even kind of hard to explain. This is adopted into a tradition that people in parts of Europe carry out as they go bar hopping close to Christmas. And it has to do with the skull of a mare and a wooden pole and a white sheet. And when we come back, I will tell you all about this odd Christmas tradition. I'm Joshua P. Warren. It's the show where we talk about the weird stuff, the amazing, the remarkable, the extraordinary. Coming at you tonight from the heart of the Blue Ridge Mountains, Asheville, North Carolina, and brought to you by Wright's Coin Shop. This is Speaking of Strange.
Don't come in.
final minutes of hour number two on tonight. Speaking of strange, coming up next, the Dark 30 Hour. Sam, you know when I hear that music, you know what it reminds me of?
Christmas.
The music of the movie Gremlins.
Oh,
I'm pretty
really?
Sure the movie Gremlins opens up with this song.
Wow.
One of my all-time favorite films.
Don't feed them after dark. After midnight or after dark?
It's after midnight.
Okay.
Yeah. You don't get them wet.
Don't get them in...
You don't feed them after midnight.
What was the main bad... The dude's
and
name?
They don't like... Bright light! Bright light!
What was his name?
Gizmo.
Gizmo was the good kid.
Gizmo was a Mogwai, and Stripe was the bad Gremlin. Yeah. So, I believe they opened that movie with this music. Or with that music. But yes, next hour, well, you might not want to stick around. You might be like a little Mogwai that turns into a gremlin if you listen to what happens on this program, because we call it the Dark 30 Hour. And even though it's Christmas time, that doesn't change the state of the world. We are going to dig into some of the more outrageous and controversial, sordid, and seedy news stories as of late. Not for the kiddies. Not for the easily offended. If that kind of thing is your cup of tea, please stick around. If not, listen to something else for an hour. And when it comes to creepy things, I have a new ebook out there about Robert the Haunted Doll. That's a scary story. It's called Don't Play with Robert, the World's Most Haunted Doll.
I would just throw in my two cents if you actually had in the merch section of the website a Robert the Haunted Doll doll, I would probably buy it.
Well,
just saying.
You would be very unwise to do so, Sam. If you go to warrenbooksnow.com, WARREN, warrenbooksnow.com, just take a look. Just go there and just look at the 110-year-old pockmarked face of Robert the Doll with these dull black eyes, like a doll's eyes. You know where that's from, Sam.
I think I...
Oh, come on! Really?
Well, the voice you were using was like the one that you use in the Dark 30 Hour, but...
I only have one voice. From Jaws! He's talking about the shark.
Oh.
Black eyes, like a doll's eyes.
Okay, I got you. I thought you were talking about the other thing.
All right, enough of that. Let's go into the Mari Luwad. Now, in Wales and some other parts of Europe, they do this really weird thing where groups of people will get together with a mare's skull. This is the skull of a female horse, and they will have it kind of mounted on a wooden pole. And they'll have a white sheet fastened to the back of the skull. And then several people will get underneath the sheet. So it kind of looks like a ghost horse running around. That's what it's supposed to represent. And sometimes they'll even put a spring into the jaw so that this spring-loaded jaw can sort of snap at passersby as they run around the streets. And sometimes they'll have bells and maybe even some reins by which somebody can lead this ghost horse, the Mari Luwad, the gray horse. And what they will do traditionally is go from bar to bar and knock on the door. And the bartender or barkeep will crack the door and say, "Who comes here?" And then the voice of the Mari Luwad will ask for admission in rhyming verse, to which it is traditional for the barkeep to reply in spontaneous, rhyming,
couplets,
improvised verse. And they will go back and forth, challenging each other with these improvised verses.
A rap battle.
Kind of.
Yeah.
Until one person fails. Now, if you are with the Mari Luwad and you fail, well, guess what? You don't get to enter the bar. But if the barkeep fails first, the door is opened and the ghost horse comes in. I don't know exactly where all this came from. Nobody's sure.
I imagine it came from a long time ago. Traditions passed on.
I want to thank my good friend Tad McDivitt, Sir Knight Tad McDivitt, for telling me about the Mari Lude. And if you are one of the lucky people who goes on the Spirits of Asheville experience, which is going to happen two more times this coming week, from Haunted Asheville, you might just get to participate in a little Mari Lude action
yourself.
Pick
yourself up a mare skull?
And you can go to hauntedasheville.com to see if there are tickets still available. We're going to take a break. When we come back, it will be time for, yes, the infamous, the notorious Dark 30 Hour. I'm Joshua P. Warren, and this is Speaking of Strange.